Have you guys silenced your phones?
That's not bad. Yeah.
I mean, if it's on, it's on. Silence the phone. Man. Whatever.
Mari, sit back down, please.
I'm about to silence you.
Ignore that, man.
Who are we missing?
Mark? Nobody gave him permission to
speak. All right, we're going to get started. All right, welcome to the Rod of Iron podcast, Fundamental Baptist, breaking down discussions, dogma, and daily events. I am your host, Pastor Bruce Mejia, First Works Baptist Church in Amani, California, joined by the men in our church, the fundamentalists, Brother Hiketop Macian, Ray Flores, we have Marco Sanchez, and we have a special guest with us.
Hello.
Brother Stepan. We'll just call him Brother Step. Call him Brother Step, okay? Arturini.
No flex zone.
He's here. Why are you so high?
He's going to step on
me.
Okay,
stool.
You guys. Hey, you're messing up the camera angle. Your face is cut off on the camera, Step. Okay. So you got to switch.
Base yourself.
Well, mine was going to be the same thing.
Then switch to a chair or something.
Yeah. Did both of us switch to a chair?
Just stay on. You can stay on that one, Marcos. Yeah. Switch to a chair. There you go. Yeah.
It was way too high for my.
All right. Let me fix this real quick.
Okay.
This is good.
He just got a base, bro. Okay. You're about to get
that,
exalted.
How was
right
that
now.
Barbecue?
Oh, bro.
What happened? I thought you had to beat somebody.
All right. Tonight we got some pretty exciting discussions taking place. We're going to be talking about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, kickboxing, MMA, and just learning how to fight, knowing how to fight, and the importance of that. In fact, that's why Brother Step is here.
Yes, sir.
He is a weight trainer, strength trainer, but he's also a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioner. I believe he's a blue belt. Mm-hmm. Right? And so I think we got a lot of Jiu-Jitsu practitioners in our church. It's important to learn how to fight, and there's a misconception out there amongst mainstream Christianity that basically has this narrative that if you're a Christian man, that you're supposed to be this pacifist, effeminate, sissy soy boy, you know, don't get into any physical confrontation. That's not a proper attitude to have. And in fact, it's not biblical, right?
Yes. Yeah.
But on the other hand, we don't want to take it to the other extreme and be violent and have this machista, you know, chest puffed out Napoleon complex. We want to be right in the middle where it's like, hey, we need to make sure that we defend ourselves. We're able to defend our wives, our children, the innocent who are incapable of defending themselves as well. And so we're going to be talking about that. And then we're going to get a little bit into the topic of Neuralink and Elon Musk. He gave some updates about that and how that ties into the Mark of the Beast, end times Bible prophecy. And we might get into some demon possession / oppression. Brother Keith is here. Brother Keith Rivas. Say hi, everyone.
Hey, Keith.
Hey, Keith. All right, so we'll be giving some shout-outs at the end of the video, at the end of the podcast, and maybe answer some questions if we have time. So we're looking forward to a great show. Gentlemen, are we ready?
Yes, sir.
So, bro, to an Armenian man, you're invited to a barbecue by an Armenian guy and you don't show up? Dang, bro.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. I wasn't invited to no barbecue.
Oh.
What are you talking about?
You didn't invite the man of God?
You were Guatemalan, son.
When was this?
What was this?
Monday.
A couple of days ago.
Long, long time ago. Is that when it was?
So this guy,
he
didn't even text me to say I'm not coming.
Yes, I did. I said I'm working overtime. I'm not
Brother
coming.
Hike, you didn't even text me to say you're invited.
That was not after
There's kebabs. There's kebabs involved.
Oh, kebabs and you didn't invite me?
And lavash.
What?
That thin bread. It was, and garlic.
Garlic spread?
Yeah,
garlic spread.
Now I'm
kidding.
Nah, but I didn't have any. It's just garlic and paste. That's the ingredients. Just garlic and paste.
No, it was good. Yeah. And this guy didn't show up.
You guys got to get into. You need to get into the mic. Yeah, so you guys got to switch off, like pull the mic towards you.
What's the paste made out of? That's the real question.
Garlic and paste.
That's garlic it. And, but you're saying and paste. Like paste is its own thing.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
You get a jar of paste.
Bro, you gotta answer the question. Why did you not come? Oh yeah, you said you're bro, working overtime. Okay.
And I text you well before you guys ever called me, bro.
I didn't get no text. Bro.
I'm still trying to figure out why I wasn't invited. Like, he's mad because he invited him, he didn't come. I'm mad because he just didn't invite me. Period. When was this? A couple days ago.
Monday.
Oh, Monday. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, still. Yeah, I see what's up. How are we doing, gentlemen?
Pretty good.
Doing good. Right. Excited. I'm excited about tonight's episode. I'm excited to have Brother Step here. Brother Step, you got saved in October of 2019, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You actually you go way back with Brother Ulysses Hernandez.
We trained together. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You guys used to train together, and Brother Step is a power lifter. He can lift a house. No. And a car, and he's working on the state of California soon. So I'm just kidding.
Lift up the lockdown. Lift up the quarantine.
Yeah, lift up the quarantine.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what
legend,
I'm talking about.
Legend has it. he lifted the lockdown.
We gotta take you to
Newsom's house. He already did it multiple states. Yeah.
He's easy. Hey, that's spirit. That's a spiritual answer right there.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, you guys. Go way back with lifting, right?
Yes, sir.
You kind of helped him and trained him how to lift, and
yeah.
And so we had the fall program in October, and we were encouraging people to invite their friends and families to church. He invited you.
Yes,
you came on the first Sunday. You got saved.
Yes, sir. Yes, I did. I was ready to be saved. It was just right then and there. I was very open to everything, and everything just made perfect, clear sense to me. I couldn't see why other people didn't think this way. That was the hardest part for me.
Brother Ulysses, were you the one who got him saved?
No, Brother Glenn did.
Oh, Brother Glenn.
Yeah, yeah. Brother Glenn came up to me and he asked me, you know, can you ever lose your salvation? And at that time, I thought you could, you know, and, you know, I was very wrong about that. And I was really glad that he corrected me, you know. I thought, you know, cool. If you blaspheme against maybe God not. or you maybe commit suicide, I thought you might lose your salvation.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brother Glenn corrected me and I had no idea.
Amen.
That's really cool.
I forgot. Did you get baptized that day? Or
yes, I did. I got baptized.
So the day you got saved is the day you got baptized.
Yes.
Straight
you guys way. Remember that? You guys remember that the fall program? It was like tons of baptisms. Like every week we're having tons of baptisms.
Yep. Yeah.
Tons of salvations, but also tons of baptisms.
That's why there was a drought in California.
it would almost be weird if we had a Sunday without a baptism. You know what I mean? At least two, if not three baptisms a week sometimes.
We had a bunch of visitors.
A lot. And a lot of them got saved.
A lot of people.
I think, well, Ms. DJ is the one who won the fall program.
Yeah,
she did, yeah.
Right? I think you're like steady second, Maury.
Joking, bro.
Right?
Well, besides the salvations, all the seeds planted.
You got faithful. You began growing and learning. I just think, I thought it was pretty neat that you, like, you and Ulysses knew each other, you know, and then, like, you taught him, right? Like how to weight lift and all that. And then he like thought about you when it came to salvation and bringing you to church. And then it's like, because I remember him telling me about that. Yeah. And then like, I remember actually I was like the first person you met, right? Where you came early.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually flew back in from Armenia on a Friday night at 10 p.m. And then Saturday I had to recover, you know, because your time zone's all messed up. And then Sunday, you know, I told you Ulysses I was going to be there. Brother Ulysses told me I was going to be there, and I went. I wasn't sure. I didn't want to be late or nothing. I didn't want to be offending nobody, you know, coming in late, interrupting. So I came early, and yeah, I met someone, but they didn't speak English. So then they pointed it to you.
Oh, you know what's funny? I think that was – so my mom brought visitors that day, and they're from, like, Peru, but they didn't speak English. And I think you got them saved, right? Actually, they're the ones who got baptized along with you that Sunday. Because they got saved and then they got baptized as well. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah, amen. So you said you got a blue belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah, I have a blue belt in Jiu-Jitsu. And my brother actually has a brown belt and he runs a school in Armenia. I have to give him props.
Nice.
He's international.
Yeah. What's your brother's name?
Andre.
Andre. All right. Brother Hike, you're a purple belt.
I am.
Right? In Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yep.
And you did some judo as well.
I did judo. The place where I mainly trained, we actually did everything. It was just grappling. It was stand-up. It was really like no rules.
Yeah,
you know, anything goes. A lot of stuff that I'd learned over there, and I took to another gym. They said, well, you can't do that here, you know. So yeah, I trained them.
There's a lot of locks and holds that are deemed dangerous, like ankle locks, heel hooks, you know, because you could, you know, in a split second you could hurt
when someone. I think of like leg locks, ankle locks, I always think of sambo, right?
Yeah, leg locks.
Like Sambo is more, they more focus on leg locks, ankle locks, knee bars, and stuff like that, right?
And the thing with like working with somebody's ankles or having them, you know, in an ankle lock or a toe hold or something like that is, it doesn't really necessarily hurt at first. And people, if you're like a white belt or like if you're not trained enough, there's always like a pride thing that comes, you know,
right.
And you don't want to tap. But you don't tap to that toe hold or you don't, you know, somebody has your ankle, the next day you're not going to be able to walk.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not a choke where you could feel the choke coming on the ankle lock when someone holds it on you. It's, you feel nothing and then your ankle just snaps.
Well, the thing is, like your feet have, I mean, they have a lot of bones. A lot of bones. So it's just, it doesn't feel like a choke. It doesn't feel like an arm bar per se. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, Brother Maury, you did, what did you do? You did wrestling, right?
Yeah, I wrestled collegiately.
Into the mic, brother, into the mic.
I wrestled collegiately in high school. I went to East Los Angeles Community College, and then I got a scholarship to go to Midland University in Fremont, Nebraska.
Cool. And then, Brother David, you're going to come up. You did boxing.
Yeah, I did kickboxing, MMA, roll around a little bit.
Hey, look, I'm of the firm belief that if you're a guy, it is necessary for a man to be punched in the face at least once in their lifetime. And also to punch somebody else in the face. Number one, you want to gauge that distance.
No.
Come on.
Look, here's my stance on it. Because we gotta filter this through the Bible, you know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. It is important. I think it is important to get punched in the face at least once in your life.
You've got to self-examine yourself.
I'm not saying you're not right with God if you don't, though. Because people go through their entire lives and never get in a fight once, and that's a good thing. You know what I mean? That's a really good thing. Yeah. Look, and the thing is like we should always avoid the fight, right? Yep. Now, I've been in fights before. I trained in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I did Muay Thai kickboxing. And I did it before I got saved. And I did it at an age where you know, I was kind of like in my prime, and then you get good at it, and then you kind of get big-headed. Yeah. You know what I mean? You say, so like, you just kind of want to fight everyone.
What would you say? Like,
you guys know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Where it's just like...
What would you say, like, the reason why you started doing Muay Thai and kickboxing like that?
Well, I kind of grew up around it because my brother was a Muay Thai kickboxer. Mm-hmm. And he's the one who really got me into UFC, for example. And then we would watch the first fights. We learned about Royce Gracie and all those guys. And then, you know, but he was always into Muay Thai. So I used to go with him to the gym, watch him train. He would train me. And then I just kind of like always wanted to be a Muay Thai kickboxer. I just thought it was always cool. And then it's too, you know, I kind of like grew up in a rough area. So it's just important to learn how to fight because you just don't want to get punked. Yeah. You know what I mean? And you never want to get caught in a fight where someone's just whooping on you and you just don't know how to fight, you know? Cause the majority of the guys sometimes in the street, they don't know how to fight.
Yeah.
They throw haymakers, they do helicopter punches kind of thing.
They're headhunters.
Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that I knew how to defend myself, you know? Yeah. But it was detrimental at times though, because when I got good at it, I got kind of like big-headed. You know what I mean? Like you get prideful and you feel like you could just beat anybody up. But you just always got to remember this. There's always someone who's better than you.
Yep. You can't always be the hammer. Sometimes you got to be a nail.
Yeah, exactly. the people. But it taught me a lot. It taught me, you know what, Muay Thai specifically, because I did Muay Thai longer than I did Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It taught me pain tolerance. Because, man, Muay Thai is rough on the body. It's rough on the body. And it taught me to tolerate pain, taught me discipline, and just kind of man up, you know what I mean? So I really like Muay Thai more than I like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is really fun. And I did gis. I think, did you do it?
I like gi, yeah.
You did a gi?
I like gi because I see it as a sport. Like,
yeah.
For me, it was more fun with a gi because there's more chokes, more
What's
interesting
going
things that you can do.
I just checked the camera.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like the gis.
Yeah,
I like the gi.
I didn't like gi because I would get choked out by someone's clothing or my own clothing. Like, that's pretty. You know.
I like it better as a sport. No gi, definitely necessary if you want to transition into street fighting or if you want to transition into MMA. Yeah, you got to train no gi. But as a sport, I really love gi.
Yeah, you know? I liked it because I kind of saw. So I used to train in Muay Thai kickboxing first, and then my coach said, "Hey, you need to get your ground game." And you know, my trainer, he worked with gis, and he got his black belt from Jean-Jacques Machado, who was cousins of the Gracies. And he just told me, he told me to approach it from a sports stance. kind of like what you said, Brother Hike, where it's just like, you know, this is not necessary for street fighting, though you can use it for that. It's more so for sports.
Well, I'll tell you why I transitioned into grappling from Muay Thai, because I realized I'm not going to do Muay Thai professionally. And yeah. I did Muay Thai maybe for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized, man, like, what's the point of getting kicked in the head and getting punched in the head if right. I'm not going to get paid for it eventually?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, now I know how to punch. Now I know how to kick. So it's time to transition into something else. Because, again, there's no point in getting hit in the head for no reason, you know.
And again, it's just like you just got to approach it and not be violent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's important because you could really hurt people. So I trained in Long Beach, and my trainer, his name was – they called him Golden Legs, right? His brother was just this crazy Muay Thai kickboxer, but he was a drunkard though. And he used to go to the bars and stuff. This guy, he was older. And he was, like, super famous because he was known for knocking out 10 guys in one night. They tried to jack him, and he just, like, slept them all.
Dang.
You know? Now, when I heard that, I was like, dude, this guy's cool. Like, that's cool, dude. Like, because they tried to steal his wallet. You know what I mean? And he's, like, a short Cambodian guy. By the way, there's this debate. You know what I mean? Where did Muay Thai really, you know, kickboxing really come from? The Cambodians say they came up with it. The Thailand people said, no, they originated from them. Who cares, right? But... He told me, so basically he was at a bar and he's this little guy, and dude, he slept all of them. And I remember my trainer telling me, like, he would say, like, don't use this in the street. This is very dangerous. You can kill someone. Even if you, for example, you do an ankle sweep, right? Mm. You do a roundhouse ankle sweep on concrete, someone hits their head, they're done.
Because people don't know how to fall. Which, is, right. by the way, that's the first thing you learn, like, in grappling and judo.
Yeah.
And jiu-jitsu, is, like, how to fall. Because people, they fall like a toddler would fall, and bam, like, there goes your head, man. You know?
Your priority in a street fight, you got to keep away, keep distance. Because you don't know the other person, what they have on them, who's around. Yeah. You know, they got a knife, they got a weapon. You got to keep your distance. You can only fight as a very last resort.
Yeah.
You got to think of it as, it has to be a responsibility to fight. You can't go look for it. You have to... respond, you know, you can't create the situation. Yeah, responsibility, your ability to respond. You have to respond to the situation. If someone is next to you and they can't respond, you have to have that ability to respond for them. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the goal would be to just avoid it as much as possible. But let's say, you know, you're in a situation and someone's trying to attack your wife. You know what I mean? And, you know, he might be like two times bigger than you, but dude, that's your wife.
So I get that CCW.
You need to have the ability to respond to that situation. You know, you're what are you going to do? You're going to make excuses like, okay, you should have been ready for this moment a year ago, a year and a half ago, you know?
Right. You know, and obviously, like you said, you just, you know, concealed carry.
But
you know, the vast majority of people are not carrying, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if you have to get violent, it shouldn't be a choice at that point.
Exactly.
Like, I have to get violent. Like,
and it's not violence.
Yeah. Just in the mind.
You're defending. Because violence is violating someone else.
Yeah.
It's basically you are taking away their rights. They don't want to fight you. They don't want to get physical with you. And you just strip that from them and you just attack them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Whereas being, you know, defending yourself is a different story.
Yeah. If you have to use force.
Yeah.
You know.
Like at work sometimes. You have to. There's been like a couple of times where I've actually had to use my wrestling skills. You know,
do a double leg.
Yeah, do a double leg or put someone in a full Nelson. But like, it was because.
Did you do the crucifix? And it was like. What's that guy's name?
Gary
Goodrich.
Gary Goodrich.
That was like UFC 7 or something like that.
Yeah.
So, what you mentioned, like, you're in a situation with your wife, you're walking down the street. That's why, like, it all comes down to your lifestyle. Like, number one, what time do you decide to go home? You're having a date. Where is this date? Where are you guys going? Is it a neighborhood? Is it a good neighborhood? Is it a bad neighborhood? Is there going to be a lot of goons out? Like, you know.
And then look. Work at talking your way out of it.
Yeah.
You know, a soft answer turneth away wrath. The Bible says.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if suddenly they start talking trash to you, it's just like, I'm sorry, man. I apologize for that. Just please leave us alone. We're just trying to have a good time or whatever. We're out eating or whatever, you know? And that's obviously it's not going to happen all the time, but I'm saying try to pacify the situation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It does come down to like an art of war also, because here's the thing. I would say like 8, 9 out of 10 guys that I've met that really can fight don't want to fight because they know what they could do to like an average Joe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you actually do come across someone like that guy, you know, by my house the other night, where there's three of us standing and he's like mad dogging us. He's actually like beating up his girlfriend or something like that. I didn't necessarily see him hit the lady, but he was mad dogging us like he's about to do something. It's like, dude, like, have you assessed the situation? There's three of us, even if we don't know how to fight.
Right.
Like, but imagine if we do know how to fight. Mm-hmm. You just have to be smart about things. Yeah, but number battles. One, if here's the thing, the math, it comes down to the mathematics of it. Look, 9 out of 10 guys on the street probably can't fight. If you know 10% of jiu-jitsu or like 10, if you know how to throw a punch, you're probably going to defend yourself against 9 out of 10 people on the street.
Yeah.
So if there's somebody coming up to you, you know, trying to fight you, that just goes to show, hey, man, like, this guy probably doesn't really even know how to fight. Because if he knew how to fight, he's not going to try to fight an average guy he meets off the street. You know, he just hasn't thought it through.
So fighting is scary.
But
fighting can be scary.
As a Christ-like individual, we have to have good judgment towards those that are trying to start something with us or our family. But then at the same time, it's not always a fight. One of my coaches taught me this strategy that in case anything ever happened on the street, that as a person that knows how to defend himself or knows how to dish it out, the first altercation, you try to lay him out. You're trying to assess neutralize the situation. Yeah. The second time, you're trying to neutralize the situation. And the third time, you're trying to neutralize the situation. And after the third time, if you don't knock the person out or if the person's not defenseless, then you're in a fight. That's the way I look at things. That's the way I used to handle my situations out in the street.
Yeah.
Is I try to get out of something very quick as soon Absolutely. As I can.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, like I said, like, talk your way it's out of it if answer, you have to. Yeah. Because look, fighting is scary, folks. Like, because you just don't know what's going to happen. You know, if you're in the street and you get into a fight, you don't know who that person is.
Yep.
You don't know what they're capable of. You don't know if their wife just left them. You don't know if they're psychotic. You don't know if they got a blade on them.
On PCP.
On PCP or something. Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? You don't know if they're merciless.
Right. Or even if they have a gun or something.
Right.
That'll be like what the if most
they,
scary part.
Okay. What? Because we think, oh, once if they knock me out, it's done. Some people don't stop at that.
No.
They knock you out and they keep going.
The yeah. Some of the videos I see on the street, man, that's like attempted murder when a guy is down, he's knocked out, and you're kicking him in the head.
And definitely, like Brother Stefan said, you want to keep your space from somebody. The first thing I suggest is
I
got to
help you out, man. Hold on. Let me.
These guys are way too tall. All of us.
Stinking Amalekites.
Yeah.
Can I go up
there? Yeah.
You're at least like.
So. As
what I think like is, as
on the camera is just a forehead.
Like as a father, like I would suggest, or what I like doing, or what I want to do with my son is put my son in a well disciplined competitive sport like wrestling, judo, or jiu-jitsu. But as we get older, and we want to keep our space. You gotta learn how to protect yourself standing up, because you want to stay off the ground. You don't know what they have on them, and eventually, it's when you fight on the ground. That's a fight. If you keep yourself, you keep your distance, and you know what you're doing. You know how to defend yourself, and you know how to dish it out.
I think it's important to have both the physical, and then you also just gotta have wisdom from the Word of God.
I'd rather be smarter, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because when I would carry right in Arizona, I carry every day. But when you carry a weapon, right, like you want to go out with the intention of a less aggressive than you are even when you're carrying. Like, you know, so when I put on my weapon, like, that's like a day I'm going out with less aggression. And to watch myself, be like, hey, like, I can't get into anything because, I mean.
It's a life or death situation.
Because you hurt someone, like, you know, you shoot someone, even if it is in defense, you're going to jail that day. Yeah. Just realize that you're going to jail.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that day that you have to use your weapon, I mean, you are going to go to jail. Is it worth it or not?
And there is a way to come in this spiritually. Like King David came in he came at Goliath with the name of the Lord. He came at Goliath with the power of the Lord.
Yeah, but that's not what I mean, though. What I mean is I'm not talking about fighting in the name of the Lord. What I'm saying is using wisdom
to pacify wrath. That's exactly.
You know what I mean? Because here's the thing is, like, you know, again, going back to what I originally said is that the narrative the mainstream Christianity is dishing out is that all Christian men are just pacifist, weakling, sissified men. You know, they got the faggoty looking Jesus, right? Who's not Jesus, by the way. Yeah. Okay. Right. And they expect every man to be like that. And, you know, you just, if someone is getting beat up, don't get involved, turn the other cheek. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like they want to say that. It's like, well, just turn the other cheek. You know,
it's like, dude, my Jesus flipped over 300-pound tables like nothing. Yeah. You know?
God is a God of war.
Yeah.
God is a God of war, and he delivers people. Let me read to you from Proverbs 24, verse 11. It says, if thou forbear to deliver them that are drawn unto death, and those that are ready to be slain, if thou sayest, behold, we knew it not, doth not he that pondereth the heart consider it? So he's like, look, you know, if you see someone who is innocent being violated and you don't do anything about it, you know what I mean?
Problem.
God's considering that, you know, and look, being a coward is not Christ-like.
No, not at all.
Because cowardice comes from fear.
Yep.
And God didn't give us a spirit of fear, but a power, love, and a sound mind, you know? So, you know, it's important that mainstream Christianity understands that God does not want, look, it's a sin to be effeminate.
Yep.
What do we mean by being effeminate? Someone define being effeminate for me.
Have like feminine attributes.
Yeah.
Maybe the wrist is too soft or something, you know?
Yeah. The wrists are too soft. Yeah.
They can't bench press 225.
Strong wrist.
Look, the point is when you come to church and you shake a guy's hand, you know, you're going to be judged by that handshake. Oh, yeah. First and foremost.
I've been like to Baptist churches where I've shaken pastoral staff's hand and they're like, it's like a squeezing a fish, a dead fish.
Yeah, but I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about being effeminate is not just a physical attribute.
No, yeah.
We're mind, body, and spirit.
Yeah.
But even character as well.
Character? Yeah, because really being effeminate is like basically you're not being bold. You're not spirit-filled. Yeah. Yeah. You're soft. And God is not a soft God. His prophets are not supposed to be soft. And look, you think of someone who's physically effeminate, they're basically physically weak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how does that carry over into their emotional life? They're emotionally weak. And then that means you're spiritually
mentally weak.
Yeah, it permeates all who you are. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Every aspect of your being. The Bible says to be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Yeah. You know, if thou faint in the day of adversity, thy strength is small. So the Bible tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, it lists being effeminate as a major sin. Okay? What you got there? I'll take mine.
This podcast is brought to you by Bang Energy Drinks.
Bro, the hype brought me a Bang. Potent brain and body fuel, Star Blast.
This podcast has so many titles right now.
And you guys know, I think also a lot of fights can be avoided if we don't allow our pride to kind of get the better of us. Because ultimately, most of the time, people just want to talk, and they don't actually want to, you know, be about that action, you know? Yeah.
And the worst thing is when you start a fight and you get beat up.
What is this?
Yeah,
it's never happened.
Am I gonna die?
This podcast is about to get wild. Let's just say that.
This podcast is about to get wild right now.
When we go through Neuralink, it's gonna be like,
just forget everything I said right now. Let's fight.
Maury's like, man, I'm trying to spit some wisdom right now.
It's strong.
I was trying to spit some bars, but you guys just like.
Sorry, I'm sorry. Come on up, Brother Maury. Come on up.
Yeah, repeat that, Maury.
Repeat that. Sorry, this is too strong.
Well, I was just saying, just pride in the. That can ultimately allow us to avoid confrontation. So if someone just disrespects you or disrespects our wives, you know, I'm not saying that you just have to, you know, well, just because he said something bad. At the end of the day, these people, you're probably never going to see this guy ever again in your life.
Right, you know?
So in all reality, just because he called you a name or called your wife a name, it's not necessarily something that you have to get into a confrontation over. It'll be more of just something if he's backed up me and my wife or me and my children.
If he physically attacks.
Yeah, or even just he's getting in my personal space. So he's not allowing. I'm like, hey, look, I'm not trying to do anything. I'm not trying to, you know, this isn't. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to do anything like that, you know. But for me, I guess being able to not allow my pride to get me into a situation where I could potentially get hurt. And if I get hurt, then who's going to protect my wife?
Right.
Who's going to protect my daughters?
Exactly, right. Like, you shouldn't be having to make that choice. Like, if you're making the choice to get physical.
People can hurt you?
Yes, I actually can get hurt, yes. And I do get sunburned, too. So I don't know if you guys knew that. I just wanted to throw that truth nugget in there for you guys.
You trying to challenge?
That was actually one of the topics for tonight, since you already answered
it. Can Brother Maury get sunburned? Tune in next time on the next week's podcast.
Look, he's absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And it all circles back to you have to think about you don't have to think about every little thing, but definitely have some judgment whether, you know, where you go at night, town you're in.
So let's move on from that. Let's talk about the importance of, because this really goes into why should we be able to physically fight if we have to? Well, because of the fact that at the end of the day, we're in a spiritual battle, okay? And often what we do on the outside is a reflection of who we are on the inside. So we should have fortitude. We should be able to fight the good fight of faith, amen, right? Yeah. And, you know, I look at a lot of the teenagers today, and they look really weak and effeminate. You know, they look like wimps.
Justin Bieber haircuts and everything.
Justin Bieber haircut.
Skinny jeans.
Soy boys.
If anyone at home has trouble sleeping or you have full of energy, just go train jiu-jitsu for an hour, man. You're going to sleep like a baby. Trust me.
Especially when you get choked out.
Yeah. Get choked out by Bill Stefan and then you sleep like a baby.
He's like, come see me.
By the way, folks, that was actually a threat from Brother Step right there.
He's like, I will put you to sleep.
Yeah, that's how
that was not an instruction. That was actually a threat.
I will cradle you in my 22-inch biceps. I will cradle your neck.
they call his hold, the NyQuil hold.
And you don't have to know how to do this to learn how to fight. It is also a great workout to
yeah, absolutely.
And it is
those endorphins.
When I coach people, my slogan is make you look good and make you feel better. So it does make you feel better as you learn how to do things and it does get you in shape and stuff like that. And then if you go to a good gym or a good gym to compete or when you work out, it's no one's there. When you go to a gym, no one's gonna destroy you. So make sure you go to a good gym where no one's there gonna try to destroy you
you're gonna run into people like that in every gym. Way.
Yeah, but try to show off.
No matter what gym I've gone to, there's always gyms like that. Isn't
there's
that the one guy? Like
there's that the one freshman guy. In high school when they would come into the wrestling.
There's always that one guy at that gym who just needs to prove something. He sees that you're like new,
and he's usually pretty good.
Yeah, he's usually pretty good. Hey, but you know what? One of you guys brought this up. Also, you want to be careful who you pick a fight with because there's some guys who don't look like fighters.
Brother Milan.
You got a Brother Step, right? Yeah. But then you have people who don't look like they know how to fight, and these guys can get down pretty crazy. So when I first started training in Muay Thai kickboxing, you guys want your own podcast or what? No, I'm just kidding. When I first started training Muay Thai kickboxing, I was sparring with this guy. His name was Gordy.
That's a pretty nerdy name.
Right? Yeah. Hey, no, but that guy,
anybody named Gordy out
he
there.
Cracked my ribs, dude. He cracked my ribs. We're doing we're doing tight clinches, and we're sparring with knees. You know,
was he a chiropractor or anything like that?
And he, man, but here's the thing: like he laid it into me, and he cracked my ribs. I mean, I was out for like a month because of that. Like I couldn't even if I did jiu-jitsu, I couldn't be in my guard because any pressure on my chest felt like my chest was gonna pop. But I remember, like, after training, he would put on his, like, regular street clothes. I'm like, man, I would never think that this guy was, like, a fighter. Yeah. Because you just never
Steve
know.
Steve Urkel-looking guy.
Yeah. Like me. You just never know.
When I would see that at my gym or other gyms, like, I wanted a piece of that guy. But I knew when there was somebody at a gym that I went to go visit at train at, and I knew he was out of my level, yeah, I would stay away from that guy, of course. Like, I wouldn't even put myself in that situation where I'm going to get hurt knowing that I have to at work or I have a fight coming up. But if I ever see somebody bully somebody that's not up to that par, like, man, that pumps you up as somebody that you want to come take that.
Yeah, actually, that's funny you mentioned that because at that gym, there's this guy and he was roided. Like, he was roiding, you know? Mm-hmm. And he'd pick on all the guys. But then there's another guy who was better than him. And this guy was like the rod of justice. Like, he didn't like that. So he would pick on guys and then that guy would go to the little guys and be like, was that guy hard on you? He goes, all right, I'm going to take care of him. And then he like spar with him and just whoop him.
Nice.
You know? And I remember one time there was a guy who was like, he did judo. So he came to the gym and he was just tossing people left and right. I mean, hip tossing them, just embarrassing everyone. And my instructor, he saw that. He saw that this guy wasn't coming to learn. He wanted to come and just basically beat everyone up. Well, my jiu-jitsu teacher, he was a black belt since he was 18, so he's a phenom, right? But he was also, I don't know, I think he was like a brown belt in judo. And then he's like, hey, you want to spar? And he just like whooped him, you know? And I really appreciated people like that.
Avengers.
Yeah, Avengers.
Avengers of our adversary.
Yeah.
And I actually think that also kind of can humble us because we would see that, hey, there's always someone that better. Has your number. Yep. Someone that's better than you. And there's always that one person to keep you that'll ultimately make you humble. So like in wrestling for me, you know, when I was in high school, I was the top dog in my school. Alumni would come and I would beat them, and you know, they would haven't worked out in years, and they come back thinking they're about to beat me. Then when I went to East Los Angeles Community College, from that, like, I just got destroyed. I got destroyed at practice, and I went from the top dog to the little pup. You know, I was the little fish in a big pond, you know? And so that kind of kept me humble, because I was like, my head was kind of big in high school, and then I went to community college, and then I went to university, which ultimately that mentality kind of left me. And so I never went into matches or things like that with a big head thinking, oh, I'm just better than this guy. I'm going to beat this guy. This guy didn't stand a chance. Some people, I did.
Comes down to motive too, you know. Some people would train like a Muay Thai gym just because they want to go around bully people.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like, you know, they're a bully. I'm like, man, I'm going to be a bigger bully now.
Yeah.
But there are people, like, for example, you, I'm sure you didn't go into wrestling to bully someone.
No.
You wanted to go to wrestling to compete. You know, and people end up doing that. By the way, speaking about gyms, just because of like the whole MMA culture right now going on, the whole Brazilian jiu-jitsu culture, Brazilian jiu-jitsu gyms are expensive, dude.
Yeah.
They're like $150 a month,
man,
which is crazy.
It was like $120 when I did it.
What I recommend is calling your local judo club. It's literally, they're called judo clubs. And you probably like join for like $50 a month.
Hmm.
And if it's a good judo club, they're probably doing groundwork too, because that's where judo jiu-jitsu came from. It's
right.
From judo,
right.
Not just groundwork. So look for judo clubs in your area, because jiu-jitsu, from the gyms that I've been to, they really concentrate on ground fighting. But fights don't necessarily start on the ground. You know, they start standing up. So learn some judo, and then you
so
let, you down the
let me ask Brother Steps some things, because he's our special guest. So
yeah.
I want to talk to you about how long were you involved in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for?
Since I was 15 years old.
How old are you now?
24.
24. And you say you're a blue belt, right?
I'm a blue belt, yeah.
Where did you train?
Gracie Baja.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where's that?
There's multiple locations right now. The main location that I'm going to is Tarzana, and that has there's Hamalu Bahal. He's a 6-time world champion. Edwin Najmi, he's a 7-time world champion. World champions come all the time. There's just black belts every day. It's an open mat every day at around 8 p.m. is anyone can go and challenge the head professor, Hamalu or Edwin, and you're going to lose.
Dang.
They're world champions, yeah.
If I can't pronounce his name, I'm not going to challenge him.
Yeah. If he's putting out a challenge like that, I'm not going to challenge him.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
What do you get if you win?
The gym. No.
Gym membership.
I haven't seen it happen yet, man. I haven't seen it happen yet.
That's major disrespect right there, though. If you go to a gym and challenge the master?
it's not like that at all, man. They view it as an opportunity to learn. Like another black belt comes, he's gonna have like a skill set he's learned from somewhere else that you're not like.
No, but if you just walk into a gym and you challenge like the instructor over there,
I think that was more a thing back in the day.
But now I would say like that's an insult.
With social media,
I think now you challenge somebody on the phone, on Instagram, or social media. You know what I mean?
But you know, with social media, you could get into contact with anyone, and then you could set it up. And you know, hey man, I want to come and train. And you know, in the past it was like that. You know, in the past when you didn't have the social media and stuff, when you'd meet someone new or you go somewhere new, there'd be that apprehension.
But that's because back in the day, people would just like put on a black belt and be like, oh, you know,
oh,
I have this school.
Yeah.
And there's
that's
videos out there,
dude.
People.
So
teaches things they don't know.
You did you compete?
Yeah, I competed.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Did you do any stand-up game, Muay Thai, kickboxing?
A little bit, yeah. I used to train karate as well, yeah.
Okay.
What kind of karate?
Shotokan.
Oh, me too, bro. I'm serious.
It's an Armenian thing. It has to be an Armenian thing.
Hollywood?
No. Glendale?
What was the instructor's name? Do you remember?
No, bro. That was a really long time ago.
I was kidding.
Really long time ago.
But bro,
why do Armenians have so much in common? Like, that's...
There is karate out.
Are you guys related?
Karate's a joke.
They're like, are you Armenian? I'm Armenian.
Because I'm Armenian too.
So much in
common. Like, guys, we've already established this.
When Ulysses, before Stepan came here, like months before Ulysses, we'd be like, hey, bro, there's this guy, Stepan. Do you know him? I'll be like, do you know how many
Stepans there? Does he like kebabs?
Oh, me too.
What kind of jumpsuit does he have?
Not even a question.
Okay, so
bro.
Let me tell you something funny about Brother Hike, right? So Brother Hike has this like Armenian radar. Okay.
He senses Armenian energies.
He senses Armenian energy. And sometimes, like, we have, well, we don't have a lot of Armenians in our church, but we have a couple, you know, Who, name some Armenians. We got, of course, three, Brother Step, you,
and then
Brother,
you're part Armenian.
I'm a little Armenian, yeah.
Miss Jessie.
Yeah, Miss Jessie Woller.
She's like a quarter Armenian.
She's Armenian. So, but so I anytime, catch up on my fraction, anytime someone else, someone comes and I tell, I always tell him like, hey, that person's Armenian. He always says, I knew they were Armenian. I could just tell that they're Armenian. Like he has this like.
Even if you're not Armenian, I'll tell you if you're Armenian. Like.
Even if they're not Armenian, you'll tell them you are Armenian, huh?
Dude, I had a picture. He's seen a picture of me. He's like, oh, you look Armenian. Like, you'd be Armenian. I'm like,
except for your sideburns, bro. Your sideburns are all Mexican, wait, bro. But
do I look Armenian or no?
No,
bro.
No.
Sit back down, bro.
You look like you're straight.
I'll tell you, bro. If you have to ask, you're not Armenian, bro.
So. That's good, man. That so, and then mail. One of the big things you do is weight training,
across the wall.
Right? Yeah, strength training.
Yeah, yeah, compete.
Now you can deadlift, if I'm not mistaken, up to 700 pounds.
Close. 640.
How much? What is it? Is 699 or what?
640. I only count in competition.
Oh, 640.
In the gym, yeah. I've gotten 700 with the reverse bands, which makes it easier off the bottom. But I don't count gym lifts. You know, you only count the competition.
It's good.
There aren't two or three witnesses. That's why we believe you, bro. Tell us.
There has to be witnesses. That there's competition witnesses. So you know, what I mean, like, that's on video. It's good. It's on record.
Fair enough.
It's good. So how would you say? Give me some things that, some principles that you learned. Just give me three principles. Or just give me two because we need to move on to the next subject. Give me two principles that you learned from weightlifting and fighting that you can carry over into the spiritual realm that you feel like has helped you as a Christian.
Yeah, you can't be wavering. You can't have wavering thoughts when you approach a barbell or anything like that. If you think you can't do it, just step away and come back when you're just committed to that lift. You know, if you come into a deadlift or a squat and you think you're going to fail and you have second doubt, you're doubting yourself, there's no point of even doing it.
That's good.
Another thing is you have to be consistent and stable. You know, like I remember watching a sermon a really long time ago about Pastor, I think it was Pastor Anderson. He talked about, you know, the characteristic of a Christian life is stability.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And you can't be a stable weightlifter doing once a week, taking a week off, coming back really hard, killing yourself. You know, you're killing yourself, and then you're not going to be able to come back. Just like if you sat down and you read 30 chapters of a Bible in a day, I don't think you're going to come back and read another 30 chapters. And
right.
It's not going to happen. If you're not,
it's good.
Yeah. If you got to be realistic with this stuff, you know, you got to be very realistic.
All right, give me a third one because that was really good. Give me a third principle.
Oh man, you know, I didn't have time to think about the third one. Jeez, so,
being a man. How about gains, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. You know what? Oh, I just got one. You know, when you first start training, you have goals in your head, right? So when I first started training, I let you know, I only squatted 135 pounds. I only bench pressed 95 pounds. I only deadlifted 185 pounds. And then in my head, I had a bunch of goals. You know, I was gonna, you know, deadlift 405. I was gonna be very happy. If I ever got 600, I'd quit lifting or whatever. But you know, right now I'm deadlifting 640 pounds. I've done things in the past that I thought were impossible. You know what I mean? I thought these things were impossible. I'd never reach these things. But look at now, with the help of God and everything, I'm here. I'm doing things that I literally thought were impossible 5-6 years
ago. So basically what the Bible says, they, you know, God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we can ask or think.
Can you move a mountain, bro?
You know what?
So he has the faith to move mountains, but he also has the muscle to move mountains as well. Well, good stuff, man. I like that. And again, the spiritual realm of it obviously is the most important. I'd rather have someone physically weak and spiritually strong, but it's best to have both. Right. You know what I mean?
I think ultimately he kind of like what he also was saying was that, you know, he had goals. And then once he met those goals, he didn't just say, all right, well, I got my goals, so I'm done. He made a goal. He got to it. Then he was like, let me set a further goal.
Yeah.
And then a further goal. Amen. And then a further goal. And that makes us stay goal orientated.
A big problem with people is that they don't stop and necessarily thank God. Like, you know what I mean? Like, hey man, before I couldn't bench press 225 pounds. Now I can. Thank God for that. Thank God for the strength I've gotten. Most people don't want to do that. They want to be dissatisfied. They try to look for a reason to put themselves down. It's crazy in the world of weightlifting. It's amazing how often it happens. You know, I'll see someone, they finish a training session and immediately they're trying to look for ways to put themselves down instead of being thankful and grateful, you know? So that's another big thing.
What do you mean by that, put themselves down? Like, what would they do?
Oh,
like,
into the mic.
Like, this was such a bad session. These weights didn't move like how I wanted, you know what I mean? They're just making excuses instead of being grateful for being able to do what they did, you know what I mean? Like, you'll be surprised when you go on these Instagram posts, like, oh, my poverty bench, oh, like, oh, this
poverty
and that.
Poverty bench?
Yeah, it's this big thing that
what
goes
the heck?
Around. Like,
poverty bench.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, man.
It's like when you do something, you should like. When you attain something, you should be happy about it. You should have some joy in your life. It shouldn't be like all like, oh, yeah, but I mean, I got to like, that shouldn't be your first reaction.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of times it's just false humility sometimes that people have.
Yeah, exactly. False humility.
It's false humility. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Because it's that false humility where it's more like, you know, the Bible does say I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. You know what I mean? So it's like we have to be thankful for what God has allowed us to attain. And humility is not putting yourself down. It's just putting others up for helping us to get to where we're at.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you know, obviously we put in the work. We're diligent to reach this goal. But at the end of the day, it's God and others who helped me get to this point. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's important. So, amen. Good stuff. So the ending thoughts on that point is don't be effeminate. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's being effeminate is a sin in the Bible. And, you know, I know a lot of people get offended at that. But, you know, if you're a man and you get offended at that, then just change, you know, be a man, man up, quit you like men, make sure you get to be strong in the Lord and the power of his might, be emotionally strong. Sometimes that happens when, you got something to say, Mark?
100%.
100%. By the way, for those of you who've been wondering what we're talking about when we say 100%, that's the guy who coined that phrase there. I thought he was going to, like, really? Chime in on something.
I was waiting to say 100% after
I always expect for him to say that. This is the only time I didn't expect for him to say that. You know, but it's important to make sure that, because God is, to him, it's important that a man acts, looks, talks like a man, and a woman acts, talks like a woman, you know. And when you start blending those lines, which society is doing today, where you have these little sissified guys with skinny jeans, soy filled, and they're just limp wristed and just emotionally weak, and not just like, I'm not talking about unsafe people, I'm talking about people like in churches, you know. And unfortunately, Bible college is producing that,
you know? Pastor's sons are like believers, you know, like becoming, believers,
like into the mic, Marcos, into the mic,
they're becoming more effeminate, like as the years go on and go on, like they're listening more to like pop music,
hey,
like that.
The prophets of old. Rough, right? Yep,
they wore a rough garment.
They were rude.
Camel's hair. John the Baptist wore camel's hair.
Yeah. He ate locusts and wild honey.
Can you find that in Armenia?
He got it from a camel. Camel's hair. You know how hard it is to catch a camel, guy?
Have you seen the spiders?
It's not like he had another camel to catch up with that camel. He had to run. That's why Elijah was so fast.
Hey, Paul said, though I be rude in speech, yet not in knowledge. You know, because a lot of times, like, hard preaching, for example, right? People get offended at hard preaching. He still busted up at his own joke. Ray's hilarious. Ray is no longer allowed to not be on any podcast. He needs to be on every single episode.
Exclusive contract.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of people get offended at hard preaching, you know, because they want the Joel Osteen type delivery and all that. And they don't want the coarse language. They don't want, you know, the hard truths and even the language of the Bible.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. That's what pleases God, though.
Yeah.
You know, God is, I mean, he's a God of war.
You don't hear, like, kids saying, like, I want to be a preacher like Joel Osteen, or I want to be a preacher like, you know, Pastor Polkadot. You know, like.
No.
One thing that I wanted to be a preacher is because Pastor Hampton, he was like a rough preacher. You know?
Yeah.
You met Pastor Hampton before.
Well, they kind of get you going. Like, you see a guy up there and he's just ripping face.
Exactly.
It kind of, I mean, how many times have you been in a service where the preacher starts ripping and you just like, your heart starts beating fast?
Yeah.
And you're just like something's about to happen.
You know, it's just like weightlifting, you know? You got to get damaged before you can grow. You know what I mean? When you're sitting down and the pastor is just ripping your face off, it hurts. You know what I mean? You're like, ah, man, he's right, you know?
He's talking about me.
Yeah. Yeah, he's right. He's like, dang, I got to make some change. Just like in weightlifting, you're not going to grow unless you really break down those muscle fibers. Right. Yeah.
It's good.
What's that verse in the verse in Psalms where it's like he teaches my hands to war,
my fingers to fight.
He girds me with strength and maketh my way perfect. He teaches my hands to war, so that a bow of steel is broken in my hands.
Savage.
Is that the one you're looking for? Let me find the one.
Psalms 144. I think that's one of them. And then Psalms 18. That's one of them too.
Blessed be the Lord, my strength, which teacheth my hands to war and my fingers to fight. Psalm 144, verse 1. So amen to that. Yeah, amen. You know, so anyways, moving on. Let's talk about Neuralink. But Marcos, what do you got for us? I got like random.
So Neuralink is like Elon Musk's like side project, his side, one of his side companies that he has. And what basically it is like to help people with like Parkinson's disease, that maybe they have like damaged nerves or something in their brain, you know, because Parkinson's disease like makes you shake a lot. And like, I guess that connects, that Neuralink makes a connection so you don't shake or you don't have those shakes, or people have like, you know, blindness in one eye. It's like a dead nerve. And so that Neuralink helps like basically fill in those gaps.
Yeah. Neuralink is the company that was founded by Elon Musk. Yes. Yeah. And the agenda there is basically to use artificial intelligence to create an interface within your own brain to basically shorten the bandwidth between you and the technology that you use.
Yeah.
So basically,
well, that's going to be the end result of it, I believe.
Yeah.
Because right now he's just using it. I was like, oh, it's just medical reasons. But he's like saying, he's like, hey, later on it's going to be used like for telepathic reasons.
Yeah, I heard when he said that, Elon Musk had basically stated that, you know, that the chip, the Neuralink chip that he's going to be using, that eventually it'll get to a point where he's going to make a universal language.
Yeah.
That you don't have to communicate with words. It's just you can communicate telepathically, but it'll be like a universal language.
Kind of like Babylon, I think.
Exactly. So it's like,
is that Babel in use now?
Well, he said that because they asked him, they said, so when do you think this is going to can be possible? And he says, within the next 5 years, 5 to 10 years.
Well, the Parkinson's part is already in use.
Yeah.
Like the technology is already there for that. But he's like, he just wants to advance it even more.
Right. Yeah. But just think about that. The fact that he said that about the languages, you know what I mean? Because he's saying, you know, and he makes it sound very appealing.
Yeah.
Because he's stating that, you know, how many times does interpretation get lost in communication, where someone talks to you, you just sometimes you don't hear a specific word or you forget something. But what if you could communicate so perfectly within the mind of the recipient that nothing gets lost in the translation? And in order to do that, you would need a universal language that everyone can understand, this technological
language.
Did he
say anything about like filtering thoughts, or is like anything that pops up in your head gonna automatically like wind up in somebody else's head?
I think he just stated,
God gave us that filter, right?
Yeah, like, well, I think he just stated that if you want to communicate with someone, you can do. But the way he speaks of Neuralink is like, he's not talking about it like it's just like some imagination.
No, he's not playing around.
He's not messing around. Like, he said this is a reality. It's going to happen.
He's not joking around.
You
know?
But you also got to remember, too, that with these Neuralinks, they're also siphoning off your data. So when it comes to the Neuralink, there's going to be things that you're saying or maybe that you didn't want to actually say to a person. But yet, how do you know what they're actually taking in from that information? That's why he got commission from the government to send up 1 million satellites. He's allowed to send up to 1 million satellites.
Did he say 1 million?
Was that 1 million? What they authorized. They said you can send.
I know he has 120 so far.
Ray, what was it?
That's what he's allowed to do. That's what he's allowed
to
do.
He has at least 420 up or no.
So,
but out on
that's what he has.
He has at least 420,
yeah,
right?
Well, that's what he's allowed. That's what he's allowed. He's allowed to send up to 1 million, which will allow him to cover the entire globe.
420,
no problem. And that's going to guarantee that they're going to be able to siphon the information off of every person.
So basically,
that's what happens on the internet.
What we're saying is that this is a precursor to the Mark of the Beast.
Yeah.
You know, 100 years ago, Mark of the Beast in the mind of people was basically like a tattoo of 666 on your forehead or something. Yeah. You know?
But isn't it like, it's funny because like, don't you think like, I just thought of this right now, but Satan's always trying to copycat God, right?
Yeah.
And in Acts chapter 2, what do you see? Like, hey, everybody heard because the Holy Spirit let them speak in different languages, right?
Yeah.
And again, Satan's just trying to copycat, I guess, that thing again.
Because he's not original, so he basically has to duplicate what God does.
Yeah.
It's just an inferior version of it, obviously.
Because, like, how are people going to, like, understand, like, everybody's language?
Right.
Probably through Neuralink or through the Mark of the Beast.
Yep.
And you can upload strong delusions up into that thing and be like, hey, you got a new update.
Yeah, when you mentioned that about the strong delusions, I was thinking about that. What if, you know, the people who receive this, because, you know, Revelation 13 tells us that, you know, those who receive the mark are going to worship the beast, and they're going to be in awe and wonder of all these signs that the false prophet is doing. And who knows, maybe this is basically things that they upload and they're able to project so that they can see these things, fire come down from heaven.
Yeah, just like we've seen that, remember I sent you that that Abramovich?
Spear cooking lady?
Yeah, with the Microsoft, that it was like a VR glasses, but I mean, it's not going to stay that way.
Yeah, you,
know?
You put it into like a chip.
So the
exactly.
The VR glasses would be considered like your iPhone 1, basically.
Yeah, as of,
and what he wants to do is like
put it
iPhone X
it.
Or whatever. Just,
And it was crazy because like when he first came on Joe Rogan a long time ago, which is like one of the most viewed videos on the internet, what he said then was He's like, well, my peers, they're building this artificial intelligence, and I tell them, like, hey, we got to code in some safeguards here. This thing could, like, you know, once it becomes sentient,
get out of hand.
It's going to get out of hand.
Yeah.
Who knows how it's going to view us or what it's going to do to us. And they're like, no, like, his peer, and who he's talking about there is, like, Google and Apple, really. Mm-hmm. Those are his peers. And he's like, they don't want to do that. He's like, I tried to talk to Barack Obama, when he was the president, and, like, he didn't care about it. And you can rest assured that he's talked to Donald Trump about this, right?
Right.
But his thing was like, well, they want to make it sentient and just let it run and let it be God, basically. Just mm-hmm. let this thing, when it becomes sentient, they're just going to, like, let it take over.
Right.
They don't care about putting safeguards. They want it to become sentient. But his thing was like, well, I need to somehow make myself relevant to this thing, like, to where I can basically be plugged into the internet also. So mm-hmm. where I, like, my physical body can be, like, plugged into Google or be plugged into the internet, so I could be as smart as this thing, or else it's gonna, you know, escalate. It's gonna go over me. Basically, I'm trying to just keep up with this thing because I'm afraid. So he was doing it like out of fear, like hey, this, like, my peers are doing this and they're not stopping, and I need to somehow keep myself relevant, or else this thing's gonna overtake me, which yeah. is, like, kind of weird.
And he specifically said, like, that because everyone asks him, and he always talks about the dangers of artificial intelligence and what it can do, and how, if you let it run its course, how detrimental and dangerous it could be to the community, to just the world. So they always ask him, like, so what's the solution? He goes, well, we got to put it into the hands of government, take it out of the hands of private businesses, and put it into the hands of the government to regulate it. And he says the only problem with that is that the government takes forever to do those things, and so we need some sort of mass crisis, global crisis, that will force the people to beg for this technology, at which point the government will institute it. And, you know, so what, you know, what's the greatest global crisis that is gonna take place in the world, in the history of mankind? The beginning of sorrows.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's the one thing too, is that if you look at what they're doing, they're setting everything up so that when we get to that point, when the false prophet is revealed after the Antichrist dies and comes back, well, the false prophet's the one who's going to say, we need to make an image under the beast. Now, we don't know exactly what that image is going to be, but more than likely, it is in tandem with the Neuralink. So the Neuralink is going to be another way to recognize who actually worships the beast, especially if it's able to read your thoughts. It's able to read, because they're not going to tell you everything that it's able to do. They don't tell you everything your computer is able to do. You realize that everybody knows what everyone's doing.
Yeah, you know how long those terms of service are?
The government knows what you're doing on the internet, because they can read your screen based on the megapixels, based on what words you type in. They know exactly who you are at all times, because every single computer has basically a fingerprint. And they'll say that, oh, we're not doing it. They're lying. They are, because it's really easy to track. And JavaScript is one of the ways that they do it. JavaScript is one of the easiest ways to track somebody. And most websites use JavaScript.
Yeah, yeah.
So with the Neuralink, they're getting everything ready to where, more than likely, what you're saying with the language, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, because then there's communication around the entire world. There's no slowdown of communication, especially to get news out there. Mm-hmm. So everyone's going to start believing.
Well, what's crazy about really quickly. What's crazy about Elon Musk too is that, you know, he's actually tweeted he's like tweeted out things that are like in tandem with QAnon. And so like what we talked about last week, like it's kind of weird that he's tweeted those.
Him and Trump are like buddy.
And not only that, but a real crazy thing that he tweeted out very recently.
By the way, tune
like,
into episode 1 if you haven't watched that QAnon.
He said, I'll pull it up on Twitter, but he said like he basically said, to paraphrase him, he was like, there exists in the world a difference in technologies in which the most hardcore technologists are unaware. So he's like, basically he's aware of technology that's like, that no one knows about yet. Like, you know, which is kind of scary, man. But
yeah,
that's why, what I think, when it comes down to like the Babylon takeover, I think that like, that those tech companies could possibly be taken over by the American government under Trump, right? Because all those companies have all their business in China. They're kind of on that globalist side.
Yeah, because if you think about it, the Neuralink is just it's a duplication, or it's just a copycat of God's omnipresence.
Yeah.
So it's seeking to be omnipresent as God is, because God knows everything.
Yeah.
He sees the good, you know, and the evil. You know, his eyes going to and fro. He knows the thoughts, the inner recesses of the heart. Yeah. And so Satan likes that idea. So, but obviously he's not omnipresent.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he has to create an infrastructure that will imitate that as best as it possibly can, you know?
So even
and what do phones do? phones record the inner recesses of our hearts.
Yeah. Yeah. Go on Google, you know, before you even speak.
Yeah.
Like, if
you think, before you even talking, it's just like, I already know the advertisement comes up.
Yeah. That's why you gotta yell at your phone and say, shut up, Google, and stop listening to my dang conversation.
Or just don't get a Google phone. I'm just kidding.
Exactly. Get an iPhone.
I don't have that problem, Mark. I'm just kidding. No, I do.
So let's say.
I hate it when my phone says, I'm listening.
You ever get that at night, like at 3 o'clock in the morning?
No.
I'm
just kidding. No. Okay, that's just me.
I got a question, Ray. You might know this. So, for a private citizen or a private company in the United States patents an idea or has a copyright to an idea, does the government have free reign over that idea?
No, they don't. So as of now, all these tech, like Google, Apple, these tech companies, I mean, they're private businesses. But
if you go to the Production Act, the Emergency Production Act.
So, which is enacted right now.
The president can basically take over that and be like, hey, we're in time of war. We need to use your facilities to make these certain things.
So that's why it ties in with what Elon Musk says, like, hey, the government needs to basically get involved in this. Well, that kind of fits in when you get, like, you know, all this beef with China and all these big tech companies are in China. And, you know, they're pretty much, the internet's compromised, you know what I mean, by the Chinese hacking, by Chinese spying. So it's like, it kind of gives him a reason to take over, because that technology, the Mark of the Beast, I mean, it's not going to be those private entities that are over that. It's going to have to be taken over by Babylon. It's going to be a Babylon takeover of those tech. It has to be.
But there is one thing you got to remember, too, is that if you look at the financial side of it, the tech industries are not against the government coming in and regulating, because, again, that'll push out a lot of the smaller companies. And partnerships are always established when there's only a few key players. And the thing about the economy crashing, it actually works in these companies' favor, because the dollar is starting to collapse, because of all these economic things that are happening. It works for them, because if they can get in league with the government doing, you know, insider trading, all that stuff, it really helps them to be the winners at the end of it. So they are the ones who are going to have the technology when the Antichrist actually reveals himself.
Well, like,
and they get,
like, I would say that's what's been going on. I would say that's been going on. But the thing is that, you know, Donald Trump's not really in like, those people are kind of like, there's definitely a polarization of two sides here.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know,
the lines
being
drawn,
and you get, and, like, on one side, all those tech companies are like, they're on the opposite side of him.
Yeah.
And they don't like him. You know what I mean? Like, they're against him. So, I mean, so I would say that's exactly what they've been doing. But what we're seeing is basically the rise, this nationalist rising.
Oh, yeah.
To where they're going to come in and basically like it's kind of like God, right? These people, they've built cities, but they shall not inhabit them. They built these companies, they built this technology, but they're not going to inhabit it. It's going to be taken from them and given to this new movement.
Well, if you look into it, the only reason Tesla even exists is because of government subsidies.
Yeah.
Government basically funds Tesla.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you also got to remember, too, there's a lot of backdoor deals that they're not going to share with you about. There's things that the government does along with private companies that they're not going to be public about. They're not going to tell you, oh, we actually hate him. No, they're actually illegal.
But I think what Ray's saying is that it's going to get to a point where it's going to be a government takeover.
Yeah.
There's a line being drawn. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. People follow men who conquer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
True.
They don't like
one man.
Yeah, they like following men who are capable of overcoming and conquering. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you see Trump making all these moves and being the leader, the strong leader, and how he just takes things by force, you know what I mean? Hey, man, what's going on here? The other camera, brother Ulysses.
But you also got to remember, too, is that even though they're putting on a front, you also have to remember that these companies, they're able to put on a front and an image that makes it seem like, oh, yeah, well, we're against
it. I don't believe that. I used to think that, but maybe it's the battery.
Well, I would say that's true.
It's different.
I would say that's true with the previous administration, but with the new administration, with the new movement that's going on, I don't think that's true anymore.
I don't see that happening.
And the reason is, that's why I say that, Mark, is because, you know, when people say globalism, they think of, like, the United Nations, but that's not really what globalism is. Yeah. Now, that's a part of it, but what globalism really is, and this is what Alex Jones has been saying for years, right? Our people who expose this stuff is that it's not necessarily countries, it's international corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's international conglomerate of the corporations, right? So it's a cabal of these corporations, and they have all their money is tax-free offshore. So that's why you got the Banks of London and you got Switzerland. So they have all their tax-free money, and then they put all their businesses in China for with slave work, basically. So they basically got free labor, and they got all, and they're not being taxed, and then they're using all the people's taxes money, getting these incentives from governments from all over the world, and they're in these countries from all over the world, and they're just robbing the entire world, basically. Yeah. And then now you got a guy coming up who's basically pointing the finger at all of that and being like, that's the globalists.
Yeah.
You know, pick me and I'll bring them down.
Yeah.
Those people have been robbing your world for how long?
Right.
We need to stop them.
Total.
So at the end of the day, we know that Neuralink is going to be a precursor to the Mark of the Beast.
Yes.
And obviously what we're talking about is conjecture. It's speculation. I think there's a very strong, I think there's a very strong evidence for what I believe that nationalism, patriotism, Americanism is going to be the new, the credo of the new world order. 100%. I think that's undeniable.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Empire, same thing.
Yeah, and I think in order to even establish something like that, there needs to be one man who's conquering. You know what I mean? And obviously we're talking about the Antichrist going forth conquering and to conquer.
Yeah.
But even then, there's a precursor to that as
well. Even now, there are many Antichrists.
Yeah, there are many Antichrists.
Yeah.
Who are fulfilling that work. So just keep your ears to the ground, and you know, it's interesting stuff.
It's interesting because it's like, it's not like it's just like some random guy saying this. I mean, it's Elon Musk, bro. It's like
he's Tesla himself guy.
He's like basically the most
weird,
advanced tech guy in the world right now.
And you know, but at the end of the day, we know to be true is that, you know, there are precursors taking place. The new world order will be established. And we already see steps to, taking place even today that are going to be the building blocks to that new world order. In fact, it's probably already established. You know, the infrastructure is already there. All right, let me give some shout outs here. So this is, let's see what we got here. We got Fundy Pete. All right, let me play this video.
Works Baptist Church / Rod of Iron podcast. This is Peter Branscombe, and I'm from Sussex, New Brunswick, Canada.
Canada.
I attend Faith Bible Baptist Church. It's King James Church. However, it's got a lot of the old IFB hangups, pre-trib rapture, dispensationalism, and obviously pretty heavy Israel leaning. I'm just kind of wondering what you guys think. Pastor Mejia thinks, what the other fellows think about what a person should do in this kind of situation, how they should go about it. Should they still attend this church?
Absolutely.
I don't know. It's you're in a rock between a hard place because there's not much else around, guys. It's literally the best church there is. And like I say, most of the people at the church,
so I get the gist of the question here. So basically, he's going to an old IFB church. They're pre-trib. They're Zionist, which basically means that they believe that the Jews are God's chosen people. And they believe in the pre-trib rapture, secret rapture. But it's a King James only church. Stay there. I would stay there.
Yeah.
I was at a pre-trib Zionist church for years. I mean, that's where I got most of my training in, you know. And here's sometimes when you hear new IFB preaching, it's like it's hard to go to anything else. And sometimes people feel that way. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if that's the best church there, you know, and don't belittle the church.
Yeah,
don't say, well, it's the only thing that I got here. You know, it's just like that should be your church.
Amen.
You know, and take pride in your church. Support your pastor. These are secondary issues that you shouldn't, you know, harp on. If it's King James only, if the preaching is good, if you're learning,
Amen.
You know, stay there. And, you know,
be
help
happy,
your family grow
be
there.
Happy
be happy where
that.
You're at.
You're blessed, bro. You're blessed, and you have an opportunity to bless.
Yeah.
Because you're coming from a lot of new IFB preaching, and you're probably pretty educated on the Bible, so be a blessing. And not on those subjects, but, dude, there's a lot of other things to do. Be a soul winner. Be a soul winner and bless the church. Try to inspire.
Bring people to church.
Be a blessing because, honestly, you're blessed. Because there's a lot of people out there that don't have a church at all.
Right,
yeah, especially if the pastor's saved. I mean, then what's the problem?
Amen.
Those are all
no
secondary
problem.
Issues. Yeah. He's saved. They're soul winning. Yeah, he might be.
I went to an old IFB church, and
saved.
That's where I got saved. There were pre-trib Zionists, but it was the best church that I ever went. Like, I love my church.
You
know? Yeah, I met my wife there. I got married there. You know, I learned how to raise my kids there. I learned everything that I brought here to First Works Baptist Church. You know, the vast majority of it, I learned at my old church. Yep. So I wouldn't worry about all that other stuff. I think it's, I obviously I'm replacement theology. I believe in the post-trip pre-wrath rapture. But at the end of the day, you know, it's those are secondary issues. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I know it's annoying to hear it from the pulpit sometimes, but, you know, oh well.
Absolutely,
you know,
serve over there, you know, because it could serve. Always be worse. People always look at, oh, how much better could it be? Or what I could do to make it better, but consider that it could always be worse. You know,
if right? you don't like it, just move to a new IB church if you don't really like it that much.
Yeah, either that or move it, right?
Yeah.
Right. I think that, like, ultimately, at the end of the day, the most important thing is if they have the right plan of salvation. Man. Because if they have the right plan of salvation, you're in, if that's the best church that you can find, you know, if obviously if they didn't have the right plan of salvation, then yeah, you should go to a different church. But if they're preaching the right plan of salvation, they just have they're wrong on different doctrines, you know, yeah. And that's not really a huge deal to kind of, you know, that you would have like, to separate from.
Like Marco said, like, you know, either that or move, and not to be condescending, but in like not even towards that guy, but just there is people, and you see him on Facebook, like dude, and it's cringe. It's not right, dude. It's not right to get on Facebook and complain about your church because over things like that.
Right.
It's not right, and I don't like it at all. It's one of the things that because it's like, dude, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, there was like a guy on there one time. He was like complaining. He's like, oh, my church had a missions conference. I'm like, okay.
I love missions conference. I went through a bunch of missions conferences where God touched my heart.
It is a big topic
for the mission field. God touched my heart for the lost people all around the world. The problem is sometimes people get nitpicky.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Some people get two new IFB.
And look, let me say this. Those same people, when they come to a new IFB church, sometimes they're trouble as well.
They're not even going to be content here.
You know, you know who the best church members are? The ones who are good church members where they're at, even though they had doctrinal disagreements.
Always you didn't go to Patterson's church.
Yeah. you're going to God's church. You know, the church does not belong to the pastor. It does not belong to any certain individual. You're in Canada. God has a church over there. That's his church. Go and serve God.
Yeah, Canada.
You're not serving
anybody
else.
Thank God there's a Baptist church out there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Bro. Canada.
Yeah. We're not getting on Pete. Thanks for chiming in and asking the question.
No, but it is a topic.
He had a good attitude about it. But you're right. It is cringe though.
It is.
Because I've seen that before, and it annoys the fire out of me because I'm thinking to myself, I came from an old IFB. Like, do you understand that most of the pastors that you listen to in the new IFB
are from the old IFB?
Yeah.
Pastor Anderson's from the old IFB.
IFB. We came from churches that did not believe like us. Yeah. And we served there, we loved the pastor, we supported the pastor, we went soul winning. And look, most of these guys, you know, they complain about their church over things that they learned, right, on the internet, maybe from Pastor Anderson. But here's the thing, some of the pastors in our movement didn't learn these things until later on in their ministry, you know?
Yeah.
And we make a big stink about Zionism, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think it's wicked. You know, there's an agenda behind it. The pre-tribulation rapture is a false doctrine. But to split hairs over it, to determine whether you go to a church there or not, I don't think you should, you know. I think you just need to bite your tongue. And look, this is the way I saw it, okay? I was post-trip pre-wrath at my old church, and this is how I saw it. Well, I guess I'm right, and everyone else is wrong on this.
Yeah.
That's it.
But did you go around?
I didn't go around spreading it. Yeah. I didn't go around telling the pastor he's wrong. Yeah. I respected my pastor. I love my pastor, you know, and it just in my mind, I was like, well, he's just wrong on this situation, on this one thing.
You see people say that too. They're like, oh, and I've gone to my pastor and told him about it. It's like, why are you even doing that?
Why? What's the point?
It's like, did he come up to you and ask you and talk to you about the tribulation? Then, I mean,
don't
lie. It's be like, I believe it's a little different. But it's like, if they didn't bring it up to you, why are you bringing it up to them? Dude, don't be cringe, bro. Like, don't change who you are just because you go to church and you got saved, man. Like,
people who come here with that attitude, they're some of the worst church. And I'm not saying people have, but if when they come and they have that attitude, they're some of the worst church members because they're going to find something about our church to nitpick at, too.
You get roasted
There's
fast,
something they're not going to like. There's something they're not going to like about me. And look, I implement old IFB stuff in our church.
Yeah. Specials. I'm just kidding. No.
Hey, I like specials. I like specials. I like specials.
I listen to old IB music.
I like specials. I think specials are awesome. I love specials. That's where we're recording a CD.
And my old IFB church, I thought they were great. Yeah.
Fire. I just prefer not to have them.
Yeah.
And not because the people in our church prefer not to have them. You understand?
Yeah.
I'm not taking a vote whether people want to have specials or not.
Yeah. Wait, you don't take a deacon's vote?
No.
What?
I don't even have deacons. You know? I determined not to have specials just because, you know, I come from a church where that happened, and I saw the attitude that people who sung the specials, but I wanted a happy medium because, yeah, you know, there's still spiritual songs that touches the heart, so why don't we just record a CD?
And every once in a while, we do sing the whole IFB special songs, but as a congregation.
Yeah.
And that's even more fun.
I love them.
Yeah.
He is mine. Yeah. You know, I'd rather have Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Look, folks, every church needs to have a little bit of old IFB flavor in it, okay?
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Right. Part your hair.
Part your hair. So
Ezekiel 5.
Man, that's another subject for another day. Don't even get me started on that. You know, and look, I find that the people who I get along with the best in the new IFB sometimes are those who maybe have come from an old IFB church who were a blessing at that church.
Mm-hmm. But brother Justin Zong.
Justin Zong is a perfect example of that. Shout out to brother Justin Zong, my Chinese brother, you know. Who
you might have to bleep out his name. Or
he goes to an old IFB church. And you know what? Him and his pastor are like best friends.
Yeah.
And he loves his pastor. His pastor loves him. He's a blessing there. I mean, he's an asset to the church.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's going to get married to a girl at his church.
Like in 2 weeks, know? I think. Absolutely. In 2 weeks. He's getting married, yeah.
He just got his bachelor's degree. Ain't going to be a bachelor.
And he's doing Wing Chun. Wing Chun. I don't know about Wing Chun, but, you know.
Yeah, he does Wing Chun. Oh, that's right. That's right. He does Wing Chun, yeah.
Yeah. It comes down to what are your motives or why are you going to that church?
Yeah.
You know, so if you're going to serve, go serve God. You know, don't.
And look, if you don't like, he doesn't preach that hard. But, you know, if he's preaching out of the King James Bible, you can always get something out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I heard preaching in the old IFB church and it wasn't, you know, leather lungs screaming and it wasn't like that. But you know what? I always learned something.
Yeah.
I always learned something. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing, the spirit, the inward, you know, we delight in the law of God after the inward man. Mm-hmm. And if biblical principles are being taught, the King James Bible is being, and look, I know there's people out there, you shouldn't preach on the podcast. I do whatever I want on this podcast, bro, okay?
Yeah.
If I want to preach, I preach, right? It's Pastor Mejia, bro. You know, you gotta, if the King James Bible is being used, read from, expounded upon,
yeah.
I can always learn,
yeah.
Always. It's always profitable. So, you know, it needs to be, you need to have a zeal according to knowledge and play your cards wisely, you know. And look, unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of guys in these churches who could probably have a lot of influence over their pastor if they play their cards right.
Mm-hmm.
If they were a blessing, if they were an asset. But instead, sometimes what happens is they kind of burn their bridges with their pastor.
Yeah,
and then, you know, their pastor kind of marks them as being a troublemaker and they no longer have that influence. So, anyways, that's pretty much it. Just had to get that off my chest. Any last thoughts, gentlemen?
More comments, more commentary.
We got just a couple more, but I think we're out of time. So, you know, I'm just going to give a shout out to Brother Ashton Ayat, James Forrest. We'll probably get to your questions next week. We didn't have time for that. And that's pretty much it. So, signing off on the Rod of Iron podcast. Make sure you tune in next week, episode number 3, right? Coming up next week.
Breakdancing. I'm just kidding. No.
Breakdancing. Yeah, breakdancing. All right, guys. Have a good one.